Can I say that as a man, I would also, like, flowers are fine. Flowers are just nice. It's like beer. I mean, you brought me something that I like. Well, okay, I'm glad. No, thank you.
I actually hate flowers.
Wow, dude.
Flowers are like the worst thing.
Wow.
You're bringing me a bunch of dead plants that I'm going to throw away in a week.
Jesus.
Yeah, but during the week, you get to look at the flowers.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get to have a bunch of stuff in the corner of my room that's getting in my way.
What if I brought you, like, living plants? Is that better?
No, because now you're making me take care of things that I don't care about in the first place.
What can we bring you?
Peace and quiet.
Oh, I don't know if I have any of that.
Warm-up topic. This will be our starter topic since Wes is back. Welcome back to the show.
What up?
So the Ask Air questions came in this week. We didn't get a bunch, but we got a couple, and I thought maybe we'd start with you to just do a warm-up. And the question is, hashtag Ask Air, which life side quest is Wes currently doing? Like what, you know, like what, like I have a fasting side quest that I'm doing right now, as I sit here and drink an apple cider. But I'm like, you know, for the most part, I'm like fasting and trying to get in a little bit better shape and eating better. That's like a side quest that I'm doing. I know you just recently moved.
I did just
what
recently move.
What side quests are you currently embarking upon?
I'm trying to get back in, kind of fell off my running bandwagon there for a while.
I didn't know you
so
ran.
I do like to run. So I'm working on picking a half marathon that I'd like to do a little bit of training for.
Hmm.
That's my side quest. So it's a very fast, active side quest.
Are you like running around downtown Seattle?
Yeah.
Are you using anything to track that?
Before, I had a Fitbit for a while, so yeah. I was kind of using that just to roughly track it. I have used apps like Runtastic or similar before, and I was thinking about trying one of those again.
Because
most of the time in the past, I haven't actually done like explicit training. I just will run.
Yeah.
But this time, it would be nice to kind of, you know, have some metrics.
Just see where you're
make
going.
Make some graphs.
See if you're
getting
faster.
That sort of thing. Yeah.
A little motivation to get those extra numbers up higher.
Exactly.
What about you, Beard? You doing any side quests in life right now?
Just the Twitch stuff.
Yeah. And it's going well.
Yeah.
You had a good Saturday night.
Yeah. I got like 20 viewers. I got a bunch of donations. I got...
Hey, yo.
Technically, according to Twitch, it's 10 subs, but it's actually 6 because one person subbed for 5 people's worth.
That's how does that work? How do you sub for 5 people?
Well, because one
it's called
sub,
generosity, Chris. Yeah, I don't think you've heard of
I'm
it.
I'm sorry, is this a new thing?
Yeah, very modern.
One sub is $5, but they have 3 different tiers, $5, $10, and $25, and they sub for $25, so it's 5 subs.
Nice.
That does sound like good progress.
Mm-hmm.
Good work, gentlemen.
That means I'm officially over 10% of the way to my goal.
Huh. When you say the goal, do you mean the...
The face.
The beard shows the face goal.
Yeah. Whoa.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a
also,
goal.
Also, I guess the beard becomes a host goal?
Well, this is exciting. That's a good warm-up topic. Down by Olympia, there's a rainforest area down there right now where it's 65 degrees.
Oh, that sounds lovely. This whole uncharacteristically hot weather, it's just not for me.
See, when I picture rainforest, like I know technically Washington's a rainforest, but it doesn't.
It's a temperate rainforest.
Well, there's spots
you
got to
put that,
that
adjective.
Yeah, you know what another word for that is? Woods.
You know, there's spots where I feel like are more classical rainforest, where it's like green overgrowth everywhere, and it's like a jungle.
Intense moss and other things.
Like that. This place I was just talking about, Lyre River.
Mm.
That's what it is. It's Lyre River. It just looks like a prehistoric jungle. It really is a rainforest. It's legit rainforest. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that that's here because when you go east, there are parts that look so dry and flat.
Just desolate.
That it looks like desert. It looks like desert. And, it, you know, you're driving through it. And I said to Dia, I said, I was just on the way back from Montana. I said, if you woke me up from a nap and told me we were still in eastern Montana or we were in Arizona or New Mexico, depending on where we're at, I would believe you. It's just eastern Washington looks desolate in some places. Like between here and Spokane is nothing in some areas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That rain shadow thing is
of course,
is real.
You probably got the opposite effect when you visited Sedona.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised. So, yeah. In Arizona, hitting Sedona.
It's suddenly
like
this lush place.
It's like I was back up in Washington.
Interesting.
And Sedona is one of those... Is one of those experiences when I'm traveling where I realized I had a stereotype and assumptions about a place, and then I get there and it was nothing like I thought it was. Nothing like I had a. Didn't even really realize I had a mental picture.
Right.
Until I got there and I realized this is nothing like I pictured Arizona.
You're going to end up moving to Sedona, Chris.
Yeah, I think I might.
Nice.
At least. I'm either going to move to Sedona or Austin for the winters.
You would get so sick of Texas.
I don't know. I really liked it down there, though.
Lots of good meat. Yeah.
I'm sure it's great to visit.
Yeah, winter in Texas like seems Austin, like it might not be bad.
I feel like Austin is other Texas.
Totally.
On the other hand, you
it's
would
like
probably
the Seattle of Texas.
Fit into Austin because it's full of hipsters.
Wow. And lots of tech stuff, wow. So there'd be interesting things going on.
Yeah, well, that's people. What I was thinking. I got family.
No, like,
great music.
Though?
Yeah, it is. No, I know.
The
it
rest
is.
Of Texas hates Austin because it's full of hipsters.
You just don't have to leave.
I'm not you know, here's the thing about Texas. It's not the hipster thing, which I challenge.
Yeah, you can challenge all you want. Hipsters often do.
I hate you.
He feels the same.
The thing about that whole neck of the woods is they are uber friendly to RVers.
Mm, okay.
Because they accept that RVers are part of their culture down there. And so you have like just parking spots that have like power and water hookups for your RV.
Okay, that sounds lovely.
You just get free power when you park there. Like, it's amazing. And there's huge parking spots. And, like, they will have a grocery store / RV park.
That sounds awesome.
So it's like a grocery store that has so much extra land, they converted it to an RV park, which is great for us because if we're coming in late night, we park there, we can grocery shop in the morning, then we hit the road.
And boom.
And we still pay half what we would have paid to stay somewhere in Washington.
Honestly.
I loved it.
I don't know why most grocery stores don't do that with their parking lots. That's like getting free customers.
Walmart does it. It's a huge, huge thing in the RV community to park at a Walmart parking lot and camp there. So there, it is the minority of Walmarts that don't allow you to do it. And they'll post signs that say no overnight parking. And what they're talking about is you can't RV camp there. But if you look at a Walmart, next time you drive by a Walmart, take stock of how many RVs are in the parking lot. It's not an insignificant amount.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say there's so many people living in RVs now, even since I started. This has been an interesting trend that I followed. I know people don't really care, but it's something that's actually going on in the country. The quote-unquote millennials are buying RVs, and you can just Google search this in Google News.
So they can move into the parking lots and be close to the avocado toast?
Yeah, exactly.
That like, stuff's so good, though.
Like, the RV industry has had a record 8 years
in a row. Is that right? I did not know that.
The RV industry has just had a record 8 straight years because they're selling RVs, trailers, and Class A's.
Because nobody can afford houses.
To millennials. Yeah, to the millennials.
How are houseboats doing?
I don't know.
It seems like that would also be going up,
maybe. Yeah, I think you're right.
The problem, Chris, is us millennials, we're lazy and don't work, so we can't afford to buy houses. And instead, we spend money on $125,000 RVs.
You would not believe the bias in the news coverage about why the millennials are buying RVs. They have the worst reasons. Oh, they don't want to work. They don't take their life seriously.
The part I find interesting is they often characterize it as these people buying these $10,000 tag-alongs when it's actually mostly people buying the big RVs.
And living in them.
Yeah.
And it's a huge growth thing. And I didn't realize it when I did it, but apparently it was part of a trend. And so the downside of this trend is that these sons of bitches like me are everywhere. So years past, last couple of years, I was staying at like campsites during the summer and all this kind of stuff. No, they're all booked out now.
Really?
All booked out.
Now, Chris, cockroaches, go back under your rocks.
I know, right? The plus side is if we get in there, there are all people our age that have kids and stuff. So the kids all get to play together. And
it's a really good atmosphere.
It's a good community. Like everybody just hangs out and talks and we talk RVs and we talk about why we moved out of houses. Like it's a real community thing.
That sounds lovely.
But they're just everywhere. They're just, it's like right, you guys said, it's like cockroaches. So anyways, it's this weird thing though, because of the economy, it's really been happening. It's accelerated since 2008.
Well, and it just makes sense because houses are so expensive and it's more cost effective to get an RV.
Yeah, and legitimately, like this last week, there was a heat wave, quote unquote. Like people are saying it could get up to 110 degrees in Washington.
You can just leave.
We did. We were like, well, this spot we've been parked at has zero shade coverage, so we're going to move for the week and go somewhere that has a ton of shade because
that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's what we did, and it worked out wonderful.
Yeah, and abandoned beer at the studio. It's okay, Chris. I ran around naked.
So you're saying we should convert to a mobile studio?
Well, we've thought about it a few times. But there is something to having a stable steady, stateful studio that you come in, you flip a few switches, and you just start going.
Matt, you are so going to regret saying that when in 6 months we're not here anymore.
I know. That's probably the sign that's going to happen. Did you know you can keep this network organically sourced and all original? That's right. You can do it. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. Make sure that this podcast is made with no GMOs.
Chris Fisher, his hair, it's so great because he's grass-fed.
That's true. This is a grass-fed podcast with the seeds paid for by your patron dollars at patreon.com/JupiterSignal.
Wait, are we planting grass now?
I've lost the thread. I'm not sure.
Are you not taking care of the grass, Chris?
I hate taking care of the grass.
I hear if you don't, that you'll get fined.
I know.
And then we'll need more patrons.
This is why
that's why you're paying patron dollars.
Here's the next thing we'll see is literally as Wes was getting to the studio, I was putting the order in for a new Wi-Fi system for Angela's house and for the RV. Just so sick and tired of horrible wireless.
What the heck, Chris? The studio doesn't get new wireless?
Well,
you're beta testing.
It's just that not only do I want to make sure it works, but that's gonna really upset Noah because you know this Wi-Fi network is his setup.
He's gonna be like, no,
okay,
yeah.
We cannot put that in here. I will pay for 16 wireless access points, one for every room, three under the toilet,
3 feet.
Yeah. So I'm because he's not gonna like what I'm going with, and I'm curious if you guys have heard. I think I've asked you if you're.
Is this some Apple router stuff?
Wow, dude, you are gonna label me?
It's the Google one.
No, see that, but it is similar. So it's a mesh wireless multi-router thing. Have you heard of Eero?
Oh. No one is going to despise this. Yeah, I've heard of Eero.
Eero is, am I saying it right? Of course. I say this, I call this show name, I call all these things wrong.
User Air?
Yeah, User Air, and it's Eero instead of Eero. Of course it would be Eero.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a more modern wireless system where you have like a beacon technology, so it's Eero, and you have a main router, and then you have beacons that connect over an independent mesh wireless network, and they call it their true mesh networking technology, and they claim that when they're working together, that mesh network has a gigabit speed backbone connection between each wireless access point. So Angela's house, the way it's just built and shaped, It's just like a wireless signal killer.
Mm.
You can be in parts of the house and not have signal.
Microwaves embedded in the walls.
Thick wood.
Yeah, over time. And it's when we had the house built, we had it installed with like additional insulation and all this stuff. So over time, she's just sort of had to throw on additional access points to cover. So she's got like multiple APs in her house.
That sounds rough already. Yeah.
And her phone fails to connect to them. Well, it drops it off the list.
Yeah. And so she's literally been in the situation too, where she's like on a Skype conference call with a sponsor and the Wi-Fi network's crapping out. And it's just super embarrassing to be a technology podcasting network and not be able to stay connected. And of course, it's all going back to a really great Fios connection. So it should be like rock solid reliable. But then you have this horrible wireless signal. And then they end up over time because, you know, she's not like a wireless network admin, so it's not like she's making sure that the Wi-Fi channels don't conflict and all that. So it's over time, like neighbors bring up channels and you have channel conflicts. And I go over there and I just throw my phone down. I'm like, I just can't even believe this. This is
crazy. What's gonna happen, Chris? Noah's gonna fly out here and he's gonna run 10 gigabit Ethernet through her whole house.
This sounds great.
So the Eero, the Eero or Arrows. So I got her one router and one beacon.
Okay,
and I'll set that up there, and then I'm going to do this almost an identical setup in the RV. Ironically, the RV being 300 square feet, but because it's so much metal and stuff like that, it's also a place where Wi-Fi goes to die. I can get signal. If I go like stand out in front of my windshield, I can get signal 35, 45 feet away from my rig just fine. Like when I'm leaving, I can pull out of my driveway where I'm parked at right now and still be downloading a podcast off my Wi-Fi, but I can't be in my bedroom. Inside
the RV. That's the worst. Oh, man.
Yeah. So beacon in the bedroom. So beacon goes in the bedroom, main AP in the under the dinette area that I have it. And same solution. I'm going to try them at both places and see how it works.
Nope. 10 gigabit Ethernet runs in your RV.
That would be awesome.
That would be really amazing.
But one of the cool things about the Eero, the Eero system, is aside from having like guest networks and stuff like that,
standard feature,
stuff you'd expect, is they also have like a 2.4 gigahertz Internet of Things wireless radio.
Interesting.
That's sort of like you put all your crappy, low-powered, slow IoT devices on this network.
That penetrates better.
Yeah, that goes through the walls better. And you can keep all of the other Wi-Fi bands for your high-speed devices.
Nice.
And I think that's going to be a really, I think that's going to be really nice too.
It's forward thinking. I like that.
You could probably manually set that up with certain firmwares and routers, but it's just nice that that's built in there. So I'm going to be combining in the RV. I'm going to be combining this with a Netgear Wi-Fi to Ethernet adapter.
Mm.
I got this Netgear N300 on Noah's recommendation. And it's the WNCE2001, and he says he's used this at clients, and when he has a client that's important, and their main internet goes down, and so they can't do like bill processing and whatnot, he'll drop in a Wi-Fi access point, connect it to a MiFi access point. He'll drop in a MiFi access point, connect the Netgear to the MiFi's Wi-Fi, which then gives out gigabit Ethernet, and you just plug it into your router. And essentially, the router just thinks it's connected to a gigabit Ethernet connection.
Right.
It has no idea that on the other end of it's a MiFi.
Nice.
So that'll be connected to the Eero. So that'll be how I bridge from MiFi cellular to what I hope to be super robust local LAN. What I'm trying to accomplish is essentially a wireless network that never crashes.
Yeah, always available.
In Lady Jupe's right now, on top of wireless connectivity issues, the Wi-Fi itself crashes 3 or 4 times
really?
A day. Really? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's something about...
I have never experienced that.
It's something about working with the MiFi. It's because it's the DHCP server, the router, the MiFi modem, like all these things. It's too much for this little thing. And what happens is services start to crash. Like I think what happens, if I were to guess, is the kernel starts reclaiming RAM and starts killing processes. And one of the first processes it kills is DHCP.
Out of there.
And so what happens with Android devices like the NVIDIA Shield and maybe your tablets is if you have a Wi-Fi network that doesn't have a proper DHCP server, it eventually flags that network as bad and then forgets the network and stops reconnecting to it. So your TV set-top boxes and maybe your Nexus 6P and an Android Shield tablet, they'll all just stop seeing your Wi-Fi network eventually because the DHCP service keeps getting killed by this tiny little router box that's killing it to reclaim RAM.
So what you're saying is now you're going to have a great connection to your carrier-constrained bandwidth.
Yes, but the whole idea is to have a really rock-solid LAN so I can stream local media, so I can have local...
So you don't have to use the bandwidth so much.
Right.
Nice.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it'll be an experiment of this Eero setup, which is, I don't know, it's... You know, as somebody who used to reflash routers and deploy them and do like wireless mesh networking with that software, switching to something like this where it's sort of like you press a button, they automatically see each other and just start talking, I'm really hoping that actually works.
Yeah.
Because in my experience, magic networking can sometimes just all of a sudden lose its brain. And
you have no tools to fix it.
Well, right. Noah says mesh networking doesn't exist.
Well, we'll see. We will put it to the test.
How much do one of those beacons run?
The beacon's like $50 or something. It's not bad. I would have to go look. But the beacon is, you think about it, it's kind of nice because what you can do is you can just be like, this area is a little weak.
Boom, pop it in.
Yeah, if we say we had that same setup here at the studio, I could put one out closer to where I'm parked at. So when I'm leaving the studio in the afternoon and I'm getting out in the truck and opening up the apps, I'm usually just on the edge of Wi-Fi, which means that it kind of sits there and tries to talk Wi-Fi and Telegram won't work. And
nothing
stuff works.
So
I could put one out in the garage.
Well, thank you for letting me know early because now I can get Google Wi-Fi in here before you do that crazy stuff.
Now, what would be the advantage, though? The Google Wi-Fi is sort of it's a similar thing. They mesh talk to each other. I don't know if the Google one extends over Ethernet or not. See, this doesn't require Ethernet to extend your wireless network, which could be bad, could be good.
Mm-hmm.
In Angela's house, I'd much rather just use her built-in Ethernet to extend the wireless network.
Yeah, but here we have Ethernet ports in every room.
Yeah, but in the RV, that's not an option.
That's not an option.
And in most homes, most consumer homes, they just want a wireless solution. They don't want to tear their walls up.
And for most people, they don't have extreme bandwidth requirements. They just need it. As long as it's reliable and a decent amount of bandwidth, it's probably enough.
Yeah.
I think Google can do both.
Oh, yeah? That would make sense. It seems like in their best interest to have people have really good Wi-Fi. You know, that seems like something they would want to be all
about. I really just want to work against your anti-Google hate train.
We did get a couple of emails on that. But so just looking at it, the Google system is a little bit cheaper, I think. Mm-hmm. You can get a 3-pack. It's interesting. In the Google system, they all look like they're essentially the same thing.
Rather than like one central thing with additional.
With beacons, The nice thing about the beacons is they're the size of a wall wart. So they just go on your AC plug, and you can even get ones that have nightlights and
stuff.
That actually does seem
pretty nice.
The Google thing makes more sense to me if it's a mesh network, because you want all of the things to be the same, because they're going to distribute the load evenly.
You'd want them to have like the same CPU speed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really curious to see how the Aero system works.
I feel like the Aero system seems more like a repeater.
Yeah. Well, they say they have a gigabit mesh networking protocol that they speak. And it's funny because when you're in the consumer space...
So is that a proprietary...
Proprietary is a plus to them.
Yeah.
Our proprietary mesh networking.
We invented it.
It's a mesh networking...
Oh, God.
So they don't say that it's a mesh network. They say that they use a mesh networking protocol.
Oh, I don't know. I should don't quote me exactly because I'm still
their new spokesperson.
I am sort of new to the whole thing, but yeah,
you're the advocate here, Chris.
Yeah, they say proprietary True Mesh software is what they actually say here on the Amazon
hashtag
page.
True Mesh.
So they don't actually say it's a mesh network. They just say that they use mesh network software.
Yes, True Mesh.
True Mesh is much worse than a real
mesh. You can't even claim that they use mesh networking because they use True Mesh.
But it's gigabit. The other thing that I think Angela and I will both also kind of like is they have really smart parental controls that you can manage from an app on your phone.
That is pretty nice.
Yeah, that's going to be nice for both her and I. So there's that as well. Because our kids basically right now, other than OpenDNS, have unfettered access to the
This Orwellian guy over here restricting access to freedom.
No. Just anal sex.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay.
Well, I feel like we'll have opposite networks because I just have a Ubiquiti and then I run my own router and DHCP server on a Linux box.
Yeah, that is actually what's so close to our setup here.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The less people in the world looking up anal, the better.
We have a real problem with crowded wireless airspace, I guess you could say.
I totally believe that.
And so it seems like one Ubiquiti router is not doing it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't. Yeah, this Aero system.
They support a lot of similar mesh, sort of like you can have them, they'll work in concert together.
I'm
surprised
we never plugged in a second one upstairs. Somewhere.
I know. Well, so I talked to. So where the conversation always goes is, well, do we want to manage that ourselves or do we want AltaSpeed to manage that?
Yeah. Right.
And then that's sort of where the conversation.
And then you don't make a decision and nothing happens.
Yeah, nothing happens.
Yeah.
And then we just sit around with bad wireless.
Right. And like Ubiquiti, while great, is on the more technical side of things. And like that may not be something that you have any interest in managing day to day.
I wouldn't mind. I've done it. I've worked with them a little bit before and it didn't seem that bad.
Yeah.
See,
you also have to run the controller software somewhere and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because the Wi-Fi is directly below where my room is, the wireless is always good where I am.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I live in a city apartment, so I have just one, and it's like it works great.
Because I tell you what, if the wireless were crappy up in my room, I would be falling up with Noah daily.
Yeah. You know it's actually the worst spot. Ironically,
so you
got to
move it, and then
office.
Beard will do the work for you.
Well, you're
get one bar of reception in my office.
Your office and your truck, which is like where you're going to be like 80% of the time if you're not in the studio, not using Wi-Fi.
I need to set it up like Dan's co-host or Wes's co-host Dan on TechSnap, where I don't know if you remember Wes, but Dan just put his Ubiquiti access point like right above his head.
That's right.
It's like directly above his desk.
That way he's getting the best Wi-Fi brain cancer.
You guys remember WannaCry? So WannaCry, that ransomware that got shut down by a hero who bought like a domain name, which was a kill switch, and it shut the whole thing down and saved the day. Well, that guy, Marcus Hutchins, I think is how you say it, H-U-T-C,
Is he pivoting it into a money-making scheme?
No, he's been arrested.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah. The FBI arrested him on his way home from DEF CON.
Hmm.
Isn't that like a double dick move?
Well, he's probably, Chris, since he figured out how to shut that down, he's probably some kind of domestic terrorist. He had inside information. He didn't actually just look at what the hell is happening.
So there's two stories. So there's the main story is why he got arrested, which actually isn't anything to do with WannaCry from what I can tell.
He had pot, didn't he?
I'm sure he did.
Cross state lines of pot.
That's probably, you joke.
That's probably what they caught him on.
That's been the bullshit reason they've stopped people before from DEF CON. No, so apparently he was involved with spreading some malware. At least the FBI thinks he was involved with spreading some malware out of Ukraine from back in the day. But other people have suggested that it may actually have more to do with WannaCry than the FBI is letting on. That maybe the kill switch story was bullshit.
Mm.
I don't know. You know what? It checks out to me, though. like it checks out that like you could be looking at the traffic, seeing requests going to a domain that doesn't exist by that domain. That's what, if the second I saw that, if I'm watching this thing, the second I saw it's trying to go to a domain that's not registered, I would register it immediately so I could continue banging on this thing to see what it does. Mm-hmm. So the story to me does...
It seems plausible.
To give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe this is the guy that put out WannaCry and now he is stopping it after it got out of control.
So this is this is like double down bacon here.
he's stopping it after it got out of control to get fame and recognition, and then they figured it out and arrested him.
So here's the thing that freaks me out about it, is the veracity in which the U.S. government goes after this kind of crime. They go after this kind of crime with a veracity that they don't go after pretty much, you know, any of the banking crimes or anything like that. So the story goes that he's about to board a flight on his way home back to the U.K. Which, now put yourself in, so say you live in the UK and you work in cybersecurity.
Yeah.
This just kind of gave you a new chill.
Hold
on, I want to check this out. So they swoop him up when he's about to board his flight on the way back to the UK on Wednesday. And they took him to an undisclosed location. And his friends and family say they still have not heard from him or know why he's being held, at least as of the most current posting of this Register article. That is...
Wow.
Like, drug dealers and murderers get a better deal than that.
Yeah. Well, the ones we know about.
That's true. Anyways, it's an interesting article. I have it linked in the show notes. If you go to jupiterbroadcasting.com, look for user air 21, right?
Yeah.
21. And then just below the episode description and the download links, we have like links for a lot of the stuff we talk about, including hardware and gadgets that we cover in the show.
You see, Chris, they had to scramble to get him in the airport because... if he went back to the UK, then they'd have to do extradition and provide some kind of proof.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Another installment of hashtag Ask Air. So this one goes to the beard, and then I think we can all jump in.
Oh, God.
So hashtag Ask Air, the beard, you wake up and you discover that you're the last person on the earth. What would you do?
I'd go back to sleep because it means I don't have to stream.
I think, really? Like, you wouldn't, like, run naked down the streets or something?
I mean, if I have no responsibilities, first, I'm going to get a whole lot of sleep.
Yeah, okay.
And then I'm going to go to the supermarket and...
Steal everything.
It's not stealing. There's nobody to steal from.
That's right. Okay.
So you just go to the supermarket, you get the most expensive shit that you've never been able to afford.
Right.
And you gorge out on that. And then... I guess you just wander.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looting.
You slowly lose your
mind. I guess it wouldn't be looting, but I would start by just go and grabbing all of the things I could never have.
Now, are we
at least the most perishable, right? Like things you couldn't make yourself.
So interesting. So mine would be like I might be like a firecracker. Like I'll just burst, I'll burn out, and I'm done. I'm dead.
Yep.
But you're like I got to start saving precious goods. Mm-hmm. So you're
figuring out transportation because gasoline is going to no longer be good after a while.
Yeah. Wow. You're really thinking about this.
It depends because is this like. Everybody just disappeared. Are we sure there's nobody else at all?
Well, based on their tweet, which is very limited in range, I'm going to guess last person means there's no one else.
Is there still like electricity running?
Yeah. Well, assume like it's like literally like you took a nap and you woke up. And
just the entire population disappeared.
So like there's some things that would still run for a while. But like Wes is saying, gas is going to start going inert after a while. The power stations are going to start shutting down.
Well, the nuclear plants are going to start exploding because nobody's maintaining them.
So you got limited time. So would you search out a bunker? So my question is, do you try to prolong this suffering?
No. I would have a shitload of fun and then prepare to reach the end of my life. I don't think I'd want to live on a planet with nobody else.
Yeah. I mean, I think I could totally indulge for like a good solid couple of days. Maybe.
Interesting.
Maybe, you know what I would... Oh, man. You know what I would do? I would drive across the country.
Yep.
I would...
I think you should at least try to explore for your best place to make your last stand.
Yeah. I would figure out a way to travel the world.
Yeah. There's no tourists at the parks anymore.
Take
a boat. Steal a boat. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's everyone in the world is gone except for the person here doing the yard work. Broadcasting studio. That guy survived.
Even though he's the only other person in the world, I'm still going to kill him.
He was born here before the universe. He'll be here after.
Last.ting.com. That's where you go to support the show, be a little retro, and get $25 off a Ting device. Or if you bring a Ting device, $25 in service credit. Magic!
Chris, the prices are so good, it's overheating my phone. Actually, that might be the heat around here,
could be.
But they're still really good.
Could be the Pacific Northwest heat wave. You know what? It's rolling in and it's making everything warm, just like these Ting deals. I tell you what, nationwide coverage, no contracts, no early termination fee, and you only pay for what you use. Wireless.
Don't undersell it, Chris. They're not warm deals. They're hot deals.
It is. It is. And you know what's great? Just $6 for the line. You know what? You want to just get something for like an Internet of Things device or a security device. You get a Ting SIM. You only pay for data and like text messages that it uses.
Mm-hmm.
It's just $6 for the line. You want to get something for yourself and your Wi-Fi savvy? You're going to feel like you're gaming the whole system.
Hipster Wes over here with his, wow, like 20 Internet of Things devices.
Wait,
he could get the Ting SIMs for $5 a piece, I think.
There you go. That's probably close to it.
Mm-hmm.
You just go to last.ting.com to get started. Check their BYOD page to see if you can bring a device. They got CDMA and GSM networks for you to choose from. Was ever better in your area? A great dashboard to manage it all. Crazy amazing customer service. A blog that's actually useful. And giveaways on their Twitter account all the time.
Think about it this way. If you get 10 Ting SIMs, mm-hmm, and you don't use any data or anything on any of them.
Beowulf cluster.
Yeah. And you don't use any data or anything on any of them.
Yeah.
At most, you're still paying less than you are for one cell phone bill on another carrier.
That's so true.
Because that's $60.
It's
for
really,
10 SIMs.
It's really that straightforward. It's easy. Last.ting.com. So now that we had our moment of warm-up zen, do you want a little moral outrage?
Sure.
The headphone port is officially dying. I think a trend has been set. Lots of leaks are coming out for the next Pixel, Pixel 2. Mr. West over there has Pixel 1.
Yes, I do.
And so I thought this would be a great topic to discuss with you, since you are kind of this market here. Google Pixel 2 will ditch the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. And I've seen this covered everywhere. In the show notes, I'll link to a Boy Genius report. The Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL will not launch with headphone jacks. They're going to supposedly double down on the iPhone way. How do we feel about this? And I want to preface this. I don't really, this isn't like, I'm old, get off my lawn kind of thing here. But come on now, everybody. Can we just stop this already? Like, sometimes a physical connection is better than a wireless connection.
Yeah.
And sometimes a physical connection sounds better than a wireless connection. Or sometimes you want to integrate audio from your phone in a way that the manufacturer never foresaw. Like, say, here in the studio, hooking up to a mixer. Noah, when he and I were talking about this off air, he said, I use my phone when I'm DJing weddings all the time as the pre-music while I'm setting up the DJ system. I stream music on my phone, and I have to have a headphone port for that. So I want to go on the record here and say, not a big fan of this trend, especially now as someone who's had the iPhone 7 since about a week after launch or whenever I got it. So I've been living the no headphone jack life style, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I don't like this. However, for the sake of discussion, I believe I could advocate the position.
Is that right?
I think I could. What about you?
You won't have to, because I will.
Really?
Because I don't think it's really a big deal.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
See, all these new phones, they don't have the headphone jack, but they do have the universal USB-C port, and you can just get a pass-through USB-C adapter.
Yeah.
That also has a headphone jack on it.
Well, now here's the problem, Rikai.
Hang on. But alternatively, you could also use Bluetooth headphones, because the only time you ever really need to use headphones with your phone is when you're doing something like running. And Bluetooth headphones work fine for that.
See, I was you until about 4 months ago.
Yeah, I know. Your truck, right?
My truck, my Bluetooth thing broke in my truck, and now I'm having to use a wired headphones.
So then use the pass-through adapter. What's wrong with that?
I have a Lightning to headphone adapter.
Well, the problem is you're using an iPhone.
Well, this would be the same issue with USB-C is you can't charge and listen to the music or a podcast at the same time.
I feel like you were not listening to me.
I know they have some that do both, but they're not common. They're not very common.
Well, maybe more people should buy them, and they will be.
I think the beard now, if you need one of those, he has to find it for you.
What do you think about this, Wes, as a Pixel owner?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I have not heard the, like, why we should do it argument or why it should be removed articulated particularly well. So I don't see a large reason. Like, in my life, I don't know that it makes anything easier or better for me.
When's the last time you dropped your phone in the toilet or in a pool?
5 years, 6. I mean, it's just not a big. I mean, I've cracked screens and other things, certainly.
Yeah.
But it's just not realistically that big of a deal for me.
Yeah, I crack screens way more than I drop it in water.
Yeah. Yeah, but you guys are like above the average person. I feel like the average person is a lot more clumsy.
I mean, that may be true.
It seems like data would just bear that out.
Yeah.
As support data would just seem to bear that out. But I'll say this: now that. Now I'm like privileged. I'm like, I got my phone privilege. I'm like, will you take away my headphone port? Well, now I'm taking it in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Now when we go swimming, I'm taking this 4K optically stabilized camera into the water.
Right in the pool.
And we're going swimming if you're taking away my headphone, Jack.
Let's be real, Chris. You were doing that anyway to get great shots.
That is true.
But I'll tell you, so it's waterproofing, right? That's part of it. And I think I'm willing to bet in the case of like your like Samsung S9s and the iPhone 8, they use the any space of the headphone port where it runs into the phone. I think in the case of the iPhone, they're using that as speaker chamber.
So they create
like a resonance chamber where that space was for to make the built-in speaker sound better. So it's waterproofing, but it's also there's other things you can use it for. Or you could use that space for battery.
I can also appreciate the appeal, both aesthetic and otherwise, of this like kind of uniformly closed device that is just metal and glass and.
Bluetooth, in my opinion, is just not good enough.
Yeah.
Bluetooth is not good enough. It needs to be replaced with another universal physical connection.
It does kind of. I think that is part of it for me, is that like I do use Bluetooth. Honestly, most of the time it works fine, but even I have had that like association, and I just don't trust it.
I don't know. To me, I feel like the situations where you're using headphones on your phone anyway, you're not really paying close attention to the audio.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose like phone users aren't like generally audiophiles.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true for me. Like,
I'm mostly doing spoken.
Like, I figure Wes would use it when he's running, and he'll be listening to it, but he's not going to pay close attention to that audio because he's fucking running.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I'm driving, I have road noise and stuff like that, so it's not like I need the most pristine recreation of every audio sound. But I've actually had a problem, significant problem, with my Android devices where in my truck before my Bluetooth was having – this is no longer working, is I just sometimes have packet loss. I'd have like wireless packet loss. And so, that's horrible. You don't want to hear that. So there's just glitches where a physical connection just doesn't have those glitches. And my thought was, and of course this would only work in Chris's single world government, but my thought was you got to replace A with B. So if you take away A, the headphone jack, then B is that year everyone switches to USB-C. Including Apple, including Canon on their cameras, like every electronics device switches to USB-C. And instead of having headphone jacks, we've all just now got USB-C jacks.
Yeah. You know what's going to solve this problem? Your vehicles are going to get a USB-C port on your stereo, and then it will do data and audio.
Yeah,
that sounds great, actually.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And I'm ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably will charge the phone, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I'm all for it. I've got more and more of the power bricks that I've bought now have, like the Anker ones, have little USB-C ports on them.
Isn't that great?
Super nice. So I can see it. And I think when that happens, then we're starting to get back to parity. But the issue is, and I guess this is how it works in the market, is
you just got to go through the
chicken and the egg.
The rough patch.
So we're making this transition. Well, I feel like I've been living that transition for a year with the iPhone
7. But we're still probably in the early adopter stage, right?
You know what I got? Was this is my solution? Is I just got a little MPOW. It's like MPOW.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that brand.
Bluetooth. It's not the best, but it's just like a tiny little Bluetooth headphone port adapter. So it plugs into my headphone port, and it's a Bluetooth receiver.
Oh yeah, I have one of those for my car as well.
Yeah, and then that's what my phone can connect to, and it solves the problem of the Bluetooth and the radio being dead and not having to burn a port. So I have one in my truck, and I have one in the RV. So the phone just connects to either one, whichever vehicle I'm driving, and it works fine. And now I can use it with other devices as well, so Hadia can connect her phone, and I can connect the tablet if we're listening to books. So it's fine. But this transition period, I just wish I could fast forward and live in a world that Rekai just outlined where we'll call it Beardtopia, where everybody's got USB-C built into all the things.
Yeah, Beardtopia will be here in about 6-12 months.
Nice. I'm going to hold you to that.
So I was talking about rock solid Wi-Fi and really trying to make it my local LAN and Wi-Fi LAN really steady. Part of that isn't just for all the other reasons you might think of, but also because I've really doubling down on home automation. I'm really into it right now. The more and more I get into it, the more more things I can kind of conceive of using it for. And now it's just...
You're getting home automation mastery.
Yeah, yeah. And I talked about it last week. I talked a little bit. I listened back, and boy, I could tell I was really trepidatious.
Mm-hmm.
I brought it up, and I was like, hey, okay, guys, I'm trying out this thing called HomeKit. Now, I know I've talked a lot about the Echo, but this thing called HomeKit, it's kind of nice. And so I've done some further research. I want to explain what HomeKit is. So last week, Chase and Beard here busted my balls and said it's like this iPhone technology. Mm. It's true. However, with the release of the HomePod, with HomeBridge and Home Assistant, there are other ways to control it. I know, I know. So it's not necessarily only controllable by the iPhone. But it's essentially what HomeKit is it is a centralized database for all of the configuration of your Internet of Shit devices.
Okay.
And it stores the values for them. It stores the room configuration, the zones, and their states and their triggers. And then using some iCloud magic, I assume, I don't actually know this part, it can sync them across your Internet phone and your Internet pad and your Apple TV. So HomeKit is essentially a centralized database. And it is a front end, and the app that you can run, the Home app that you can run, is a front end to that database that gives you the ability to manage and add new devices without ever having to use the vendor's app.
Nice.
So you don't have to download the LifeX app or the Hues app or whatever.
Many of which I've heard are terrible.
Yes. One of the things they're particularly terrible about is if you, like, say like the Belkin stuff, like the Wemo stuff, you set it all up on one phone, and then you get a new phone. And you install the app, because you say, be like me, I like to do a fresh OS on a new phone. I install the app again. No, can't set up. Can't. The devices, for whatever reason, I can only manage them on my old phone. Can't set them up on the new phone.
Really?
And here's the other problem. Say Belkin decides to stop making the app. Now I can't manage those lights.
Ugh.
HomeKit is completely independent of any vendor application.
Okay.
So Belkin could go out of business, and I can still manage my Belkin plugs using HomeKit.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I really like about it, it's all over the LAN. And it's all end-to-end, device-to-device encrypted.
Nice.
All pluses.
Yeah.
So this is some of the things we talked about last week. This is just to catch everybody up that didn't catch the last episode. Since we published last week's episode, the guy that runs the Internet of Shit Twitter account posted saying that it looks like Apple may actually save us from the Internet of Shit. And I will be the first to criticize Apple when they do stupid shit like things we've talked about in the past, like removing VPNs from China, et cetera, et cetera. But this is, I think, a good move. This, and I'm not the only one thinking this. This guy that writes Internet of Shit also thinks that. He says Apple has pulled a massive HomeKit U-turn to keep up with the Amazon Echo and the Google Home. And they're allowing one of the most controversial aspects of HomeKit to be tweaked. In the past, you had to have a hardware chip approved by Apple doing the device-to-device encryption.
Okay.
Then, once you got this all working, you had to send it all to Apple in one of their verification labs, in which they bang on it, break it, and send it back to you and tell you to go fuck yourself. Very, very crudely, too, I'll say. It's like, there's no screwing around at Apple about this. Like, you don't get it just right. You cannot ship the product. You cannot put our logo on there. You can't say it's HomeKit compatible. It will not work with iPhone unless you fix these problems. And so vendors have been like, all right, you know what? We're wasting our time and money. Apple is being a perfectionist here. They're never going to be happy with our implementation. So it's really slowed the HomeKit market down.
Okay, yeah.
Well, as of WWDC 2017 in June, they announced that they're allowing vendors to do a software implementation of the client-to-client communication encryption. So with a firmware update, now these devices can do the encryption.
Wow, yeah, that
and
does
so
change things.
We're seeing sort of a hockey puck sort of like takeoff of devices all of a sudden. A bunch of new devices are hitting the market, and Apple is approving more devices faster than ever in these labs. They're still testing them, making sure the encryption works. That's also, by the way, one of the other nice things about the HomeKit setup. Since there's no vendor app, you don't have to ever worry about those going away.
Yeah.
But additionally, the encryption's all been verified by Apple that it works. And firmware updates can still be managed and alerted through the HomeKit app.
Nice, yeah.
So even if you never install the vendor app, you still can manage all the security patches and stuff like that.
On the flip side, that does mean that it's easier to break that encryption, because software encryption is a lot easier to break than hardware encryption.
Yeah, I would think so.
And that home automation seems like a juicy target, because who knows what you can turn on.
The flip side is... this is sort of historically an area where Apple seems to have gotten it pretty right. encryption and stuff like that.
It's also better than the no encryption.
Well, and it's an area where vendors like Belkin and TP-Link have traditionally gotten it wrong.
Yeah. Right.
So I'd rather have the HomeKit standard than each vendor.
Whatever they're going to do.
Doing their own weird thing. So it's, you're right. But the thing about HomeKit, it's inherently all land-based. There's no cloud connectivity, where the Echo stuff and the Google Home stuff, you all pair it with a cloud account, you connect it through a cloud device, and it's all talking to the internet. The commands go up to the cloud service, they initiate the action, they trigger Hue's API, and then the lights turn on. With HomeKit, you say, hey, Shlomo, turn on the lights. And by the time you're done enunciating the S, the lights are on because it's all from the phone to the device. It's all super fast, land encrypted. So
is really nice.
To me, with my setup in the RV, it just started to seem like the obvious way to go, because even though I like the Echo a lot, as soon as our MiFi connection starts getting throttled or any connectivity issues, it just flashes a red ring at me and tells me it can't help me and my lights, But here's the problem. It's not just my lights. I keep talking about lights because that's what I have the most of.
Right.
But this is where it actually started becoming valuable to me. So before I go completely off of lights and stuff, I just want to mention one of the things that's nice is prices are getting kind of reasonable. KooGeek, KOOGeek, has a LED light bulb that doesn't require a hub. It just connects directly to HomeKit. And then, so there's no app, there's no hub. You just
put the software in the bulb.
Yeah, you just put a light bulb in a socket, and then you're controlling it.
That's really nice.
You're actually putting a computer in a socket with the light bulb attached.
Yeah. And they also are now selling just the computer socket, and then you can put any light bulb in it kind of makes sense. And all of these HomeKit devices have a code sticker. Mm. You scan that code sticker, and then it starts talking to the iPhone or the iPad or whatever you're using. And then it gives the Wi-Fi information over the device, and boom, it's online. With, say, a TP-Link or a LifeFix bulb, you turn them on, they broadcast a wireless network, a Wi-Fi network. You join your phone to their Wi-Fi network. So first you have to install their app while you're on your actual Wi-Fi. So first install their app while you're on Wi-Fi.
Right.
Then you join their Wi-Fi network. Then you launch their app. Then it starts talking to it. Then it scans all of the available wireless networks that your phone knows about. You tell it which one it wants to use. You give it the password. Then the device connects to your actual Wi-Fi network, and your phone just loses connectivity. Most phones, though, will just connect to the next saved Wi-Fi network they have. So then your phone eventually reconnects. Then if the app hasn't stumbled because your phone's lost all connectivity or switched to LTE, then the app comes back. It then talks to the device. You finish setting it up. Then you connect it to your Alexa account or your Google Home account, and now you can manage it as long as your internet's up. With HomeKit, you open up the Home app, you scan the barcode, it's paired. You're done.
That's really nice. Wow.
It's quite nice. So I got this bulb. These bulbs are nice.
Bulb.
Also got a smart plug. Got a couple of these smart plugs. These are nice. These are ways you can make anything that just goes into AC plug.
I thought I would get smart plugs. Seemed like nice.
Yeah, it was like $30. They were on sale for $21.
Don't forget your fancy anti-rat camera setup.
Yeah, that's true. There's a couple of different cameras that will work in there and send alerts through HomeKit, which is really nice. But here's the one I'm excited about. This is where it starts actually getting a lot more valuable to me is... So there's these $40 flood sensors that I think it's like Fabero makes, and they detect leaks and they
moisture.
Detect temperature
really?
And moisture levels. And so I have two places. I have one under my sink that we had a leak recently, and I think I fixed it, but I don't know because I think when we drive, this part comes loose, and I think it starts to leak after a few months.
Mm-hmm.
But by a few months, I've forgotten about it. So this will now just tell me when the sink's leaked, which is nice. And then because it also has a temperature sensor... I've put one down in my water bay where I've also had a leak in the past.
Oh.
And I've also had a problem with my pipes freezing in the winter. And so this is now triggered to not only notify me if it detects water leakage, but it turns my lights blue. So my lights go blue if I'm leaking water. So there's an immediate visual.
Wow,
something's wrong.
That's,
all the lights
awesome.
Have gone blue, which is so cool because it's like I got a little cup of
like
water.
It's like red alert. But
yeah, it's blue alert.
But it also detects when the temperature goes below freezing?
It actually, the way I have it set now is it sets a trigger. So this is one of the other things is that the Echo doesn't really do that HomeKit does, is there's actions and triggers. So as you add more devices to HomeKit, they become sensors. So my camera that Rikai just mentioned is a motion. It's also a motion sensor.
Oh, cool.
So now HomeKit has presence awareness because of motion. Now I also have temperature and water as triggers. So when water is detected or a temperature is detected, so when it gets down to 38 degrees, an alert is sent. And these are just small ways that I can sort of keep on top of stuff.
You know, as a side note, I'm surprised more RVs don't come with security systems like that because it's a house that you can drive off with.
I really think all this stuff, I think all this stuff is going to, if you think about it, you don't even have to get into the Apple or iPhone ecosystem to use it. You just
I would like to ask you more about that.
So you can look at Home Assistant. Mm-hmm. That's one open source way to go. That's a web-based.
Okay, yeah, that seemed very interesting.
But, you know, honestly, you also consider just buying a used iPad and just saying, this is my always home iPad. Mm-hmm. It's on the Wi-Fi network. It's plugged in all the time because iPads can act as a hub.
Nice.
Yeah, you don't even have to use Apple devices. You can, I mean, the iPad, you don't use it as an iPad. You use it as an interface.
It's the HomeKit controller.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. That seems reasonable.
And that's what home manufacturers are doing, is they're just building an iPad and say, this is your HomeKit controller. Yeah. And don't consider it really an iPad. Don't play Angry Birds on this.
Yeah.
You use this to add new devices and stuff like that and manage them. And the iPad will act as a hub if you leave it home, which means then you can remotely control these devices too without having to use a third-party cloud service.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, all encrypted again.
Wow.
So I think this
that
area...
That does kind of seem like a good way to go.
Yeah, like one of the other things I'm going to eventually do, so when I detect flooding in my water bay, so I have temperature sensing, but the same device detects flooding, right now I just get alerts and my lights turn colors.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get more comfortable with like wiring in DC controllers and stuff like that, I'm going to have it automatically kill the water pump. So that way, one of the things that could happen is we have been going down the road and we'll often leave the water pump on so the sinks and the toilets still work when the kids and Hadi are walking around, they want to use that stuff. Well, wouldn't you know it, something fell off the counter, and as it fell, it knocked the water faucet on.
Oh.
So I'm driving for 45 minutes, and it's just pumping water from the fresh tank into the gray tank, just pumping water the whole way. And if I could have had a sensor in the mix that would have said, oh, wait a minute, this isn't right, kill the pump. I absolutely would have.
Yes, that's great.
Almost had a catastrophe.
This is like the next level stuff here.
Based on temp, you know, and also like temperatures, like when the inside gets up to 80 degrees, kick the AC on.
Mm-hmm. Or in the winter when you're set up permanently in a place, you can have the pipe heating stuff that you have automatically turn on instead of having to go out and blow freezing weather.
That is absolutely my intention to have this. So one of the ways you just keep the pipes warm in that water bay is with a lamp. So I will have a lamp remotely triggered when the weather temperature gets to a certain...
I know people that could use that in their traditional houses to keep their pipe from freezing.
I whatever system you use, so this to me, so HomeKit to me seems to be, if you would have been back in the past, you would have been somebody that would have cobbled together a system yourself or wired it together or used it. HomeKit's kind of that, but it's a centralized database for the configuration. Whereas what the Echo does or the Google Home does is it's a different breed. It's a service-based architecture where the devices are a product of the service, but they're not the end result. Where with like these plugs I got for $30, this vendor literally could go out of business.
Doesn't
and I can
matter.
Use them forever.
Yep.
And I'm going to put them on their own private Wi-Fi network, so it's going to be isolated from the rest of the network too. I'm really jazzed about something that's local, encrypted. But each service has its advantages. Like the nice thing about the Echo one is there's tons of products available for
it. Yeah, that's
lots of
wide,
stuff.
Yeah.
And more and more vendors are actually, you know, selling based on the fact that they integrate in with the Echo. Most of the stuff that works with HomeKit also works with the Echo though. So you're not necessarily locked into HomeKit.
That's nice. I got to say it does set Apple apart, and I do have faith, you know, they have buckets of cash, so they're going to be here for a while, and it makes sense that they would be actively involved in helping make sure that the ecosystem that they used is healthy and secure.
Yeah, and they have a good amount of accessories that tie into it, so you're going to have the HomePod in December.
What does that do?
Which is like that is going to be like an Echo.
Mm.
So you won't have to have an internet phone at that point.
See, there we go. I'm already more on board.
Yeah, yeah. So then that starts to get a little less like you have to switch from the Android lifestyle to the iOS lifestyle.
And this is one area where like I don't, you know, I have issues of using iOS necessarily. Like it just doesn't always, it's not it something I want to do right now.
Yeah,
but I don't mind supporting them in this context where it's sort of like a hardware and other thing vendor.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an odd comparison, but I kind of like to think about it as using like Nagios for monitoring versus software as a service monitoring.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Rolling your own monitoring versus having a hosted monitoring service.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the beard with the monitoring reference. I like this. Keep it up.
All right, so I'll drop a link to those in the show notes as well. Have flood sensors, really cool. And it's $39.
Damn. Okay, I'm going to have to buy some of these things now.
They see
what have you done to my pocketbook?
The prices are coming down because HomeKit replaces the need for a hub. So when you don't have to, like these devices before, it was $40 for the sensor, but it was $220 for the hub.
Yikes.
And yet, you know, then once you got the hub, you could buy as many sensors for $30 as you want. Mm-hmm. But now HomeKit sort of acts as the configuration database. It's kind of nice. Are you gentlemen ready for another edition of hashtag Ask Error?
No, I hate those guys.
I know. The audience wants to know, hashtag Ask Error. What is a normal thing that is actually pretty fucking weird when you think about it? What's a normal thing? And I'll take this one since you guys fielded the other two. I'll tell you, it's the availability of food and the obsession we have with food as a people. You know, if you notice, like, as a herd, we all move in at certain times to all the restaurants, and the herd comes and the herd goes. Anybody that works in the restaurant business knows this. And there's food everywhere. Gas stations, coffee stops, restaurants, always just tons of food. And then the product imagery and marketing of food is ridiculous. And we all just accept it. Like the fast food burgers or the Subway sandwiches, they are perfectly crafted with Crisco and food dye and somebody spraying it with water and putting just the right lighting and take these amazing, immaculate pictures of these burgers that look nothing like reality. And we all just accept it. We all just pretend like it's totally normal. Well, and we all like, yeah, that looks good. I want to put that in my mouth.
Chris, what if we just go up a level and think about the fact that us as humans have been indoctrinated into this herd mentality as a whole, and we just accept that there's certain things in life that we have to do? That's pretty fucking weird.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, give me an example of something like paying taxes.
Working at certain jobs, working at jobs at all.
You know what's kind of weird is that we're just born into a country and then it's like you're assigned that society's laws and norms. Like, you know, you can go beyond that. Just taxes, like, you know, you're assigned their definitions of what's normal. You're assigned, you all of a sudden are expected to get a job and you're expected to do something with your
life plan.
We have this society based around doing a bunch of work to gather up bits of paper and metal to give to other people to get things that we want.
I think maybe that's the weirdest thing of all that we all just accepted as normal is we are here for an amount of time that literally doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are so insignificant that we can probably not properly process how insignificant we are.
And then
but we fight over everything.
Yeah, the majority of humanity spends most of their time doing things they hate.
Yeah.
Just so they can do things they like for a little bit of their time.
Yeah.
And it's because we are incapable of fully realizing our own immortality that, like, you see it with kids. Kids fight over toys. Adults fight over resources and money and status. It's all for nothing. You know, people race towards paying off their cars and their house, or people race towards doing X, Y, Z. For what?
Here's another thing.
They'll just die in the end.
We don't think about it.
We have these massive wars and debates over things like religion. These intangible concepts
that we can't actually
they can't change what's inside your head.
Yeah,
but we still go to war and kill people over this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I watched the neighbor boy and my son have a debate about what is a Christian. And
interesting.
One is 6, and one is 8, and you know, like they can barely even grasp the concepts in which they are fighting about, and yet they're having an argument about it.
Wow.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what other people believe because it's not affecting you.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense.
Yeah. It is. There's so many things out there. Like, there's so many. Like, I honestly think one of the things, the other things is how the medical industry gets taken seriously. Like, because they wear these white suits and they have doctors and they have nurses and they have buildings and they have expensive equipment. But what they do at the end of the day is freaking barbaric. Like the dentist office, that is Barbary. That is literally Barbary. And we just, this is a professional service. This is totally normal. This is a normal thing that people would be doing. It's really something.
Have you tried wearing a white coat, though? You might look pretty
good.
Well,
I feel like...
Yeah, I have.
At the end of the day, though, those to me aren't so weird because
they're weird.
What's what? Yeah, but what's the other practical way of fixing these problems?
Living healthy?
Well, yeah. But assuming that you have these problems, how else are you going to fix them?
Yeah, I don't know. Something that seems more genuine. I can't tell you what it is. I can't. That's
just
actually the thing.
Magic the teeth
or
out of your head.
Maybe they acknowledge how weird it is.
You think about it, though. Like, so you could apply that to anything we've just brought up. Like, when you look at it and you were to, say, hit the reset button, it would pretty much just end up right back where we're at. Because that's when you can, you know, when all things are taken in and everything's averaged out, you kind of just end up where we're at. And that's.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Really? You think if we hit the reset button, things would be different?
I think
how far back does the reset button go?
So let's define reset. Yeah, you're right. Thank you. So reset, I think, is So society's structures are gone. So there is no borders. But there's people. Mm-hmm. There's resources still, and we all have to come up with a way to rebuild. And then you zoom out, and we go 25, 30 years after that. What do you say? Does that seem reasonable? Like, so we've reset. New government structures have been set up. New institutions have begun.
Why do we need to have governments?
Well, would we? I don't know. How would it look?
Well, why can't we just have a co-op, collective barter economy kind of stuff going on?
Would we?
Without a government, reset, it would fracture.
What about the internet? Like, what if somehow society reset, but we still had connectivity? Mm. We still had the ability to.
Those sysadmins are pretty dedicated.
You say that we would fracture, but what if? We also added the concept that people understand that their personal feelings only affect them. And
so are people also enlightened somehow? How did they get enlightened?
I don't know.
It's part of the reset.
Everybody get a little like, did everybody start microdosing LSD?
Chris,
like, what happened?
We're resetting the world here.
I don't understand, though.
We're setting up the ideal start.
We're not resetting humanity. See, that's what I'm saying. Is
that's
like
what we need.
If you take humans as a constant and you reset the things around them, we eventually end up in another shit situation because humans are turn things into dumpster fires.
I agree. We'll probably end up in another shit situation, but I don't necessarily think it'll be the same shit situation. I think it depends on who is guiding that progression.
Do you think there would
be
a way?
Beard for president.
No president. Like common wisdom, a Borg collective via the internet. Could it work? Because it's like, look at
the internet hasn't really engendered me with that kind of faith in itself.
But think about how we do things like elections or borders or any of these things that just seem totally arbitrary. Well, like to me, I just did a show with Joe.
He could be,
for all I know, he could be in the other room. He's on the other side of the world. He could be on the internet. Literally destroys all borders.
Yeah. What?
I'm not trying to be George Soros here, but my point is, it seems like if you were to reboot today, but still had the availability of the communications platform that is the internet, we might do things differently.
That's fair.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of where we've ended up are because of the thousands of years that it took to get here. So a lot of those concepts are ancient concepts that. Right. We've just adapted to work today, but probably aren't really the ideal setup.
Yeah, some systems were literally designed because communications were slow. Like the Electoral College is set up because it took a long time for information to get around.
Do you think it's possible that like the internet will help, would just make it like more negative?
Maybe.
Like just exacerbate that and provide niche or very extreme groups more communications?
If you would have asked me that question 5 years ago, it's like, no, the internet's great.
Or.
But now it's just turned into like.
Like, I don't know, but. Yeah, it's interesting.
Or is that negativity a result of the past few thousand years of evolution and where we've been brought to?
Yeah, no,
or just
fair.
A hyper-political, super
more of a symptom,
environment.
Symptom than a cause. Yeah,
like everybody's nerves are just on edge because of
if we're in an ideal co-op collective, there's no government. We don't have to worry about that.
We're all naked all the time. It's great.
I feel like the reason why that doesn't work, although I wish it could, is because psychopaths are a thing. And psychopaths will manipulate people and they will get herds of people to follow them and they will create centers of power and then they will ruin a good thing.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for the damn psychopaths out there.
Maybe I'm one of them.
That seems very plausible.
DigitalOcean.com. Go there and do the promo code.
Here's the thing.
Yep, all one word, like you're slurring it, Rika. Yeah. All one word. And you apply it to your account and you get a $10 credit. DigitalOcean is a rocking infrastructure to spin up their rigs in seconds that can be your rigs. They call them droplets. I call them servers, but whatever you call them, you can get started in less than 55 seconds with all SSDs for the drive, a simple API, and a dashboard to die for. A dashboard to die for. They should take that.
They really should.
That's good. Like, how come I've never said that before? I probably don't.
They probably don't want to attach death to their service.
Yeah, I can understand that.
How about a dashboard that will change your life?
How about droplets that spin up so fast it'll give you a heart attack? Huh?
You're in a morbid mood today.
I think we should keep that one in the oven for a bit.
No good? Just keep working on it? Oh, okay. Well, you could try it out for yourself. Go over there, create the account, then apply the promo code. Here's the thing. All one word. You get that $10 credit, you could spin up that $5 rig and run it 2 months for free. They have entire open source stacks ready to go or just deploy the base system. They even have free BSD.
A dashboard that has so many awesome layers that it's like an internet lasagna.
Oh, that's not bad, but I was trying to go for rhyming, like a dashboard for diabetes, but that's no good either. You can't, no.
I feel like your rhymes are really morbid.
I know. It's just the service is so good that anything in comparison doesn't hold up. You just got to try it out yourself. DigitalOcean.com now with high CPU droplets for compute-intensive applications. DigitalOcean.com, promo code, here's the thing. Let's do a little what we're watching or what we're listening to here on the show to give the audience something to catch after the show before we get out of here. So, Mr. Wes, what are you listening to right now?
The most recent podcast I've picked up is one called The Cognicast. It sounds weird, but it's pretty much just it's a podcast put on by a company called Cognitect, who are the maintainers of the Clojure programming language. But they do long-form interviews with various people in the developer community, but they, you know, it's not just like a let's talk tech. They certainly do talk tech, but it's not just Clojure people. They start all the interviews off with, like, questions about people's experience with art. So it's a ranged show. But you also get a lot of people who've been in the software world for a long time, worked at a diverse set of companies, and some of their experiences. Or it's like prominent library authors in the community. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Man, is that not the perfect thing for podcasting, where you can have a podcast about a particular language?
Mm-hmm.
And it just like, it's like,
it can be niche. It can be, but
yeah, that's awesome. Wow. Okay. Well, I don't know if I have any that cool. Jeez, now I feel okay. What about you, Beard? What are you watching? Is it like, it doesn't have to be a podcast.
I was going to say that I don't listen to podcasts. Because I hear all the things wrong with them.
That's fair.
One of the reasons that I'm so sick of editing is that I hear the problems in everything. But
it's true. That is a big problem. Mm-hmm.
Wes did remind me of long-form content that I do occasionally listen to one podcast, and that is it's an NPR podcast, This American Life.
Oh, sure. Great.
With Ira Glass, I think his name is.
I enjoy that show a lot.
Yeah.
It's really nice because it dips into people's lives and topics just for an episode.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to hear about that stuff.
Well, it's just one of the best well-done shows.
Yeah, it's also, very well produced.
Yeah,
and,
it's just super well done.
But aside from that, I mostly watch video game people. So like,
Twitch?
Mostly Twitch, the occasional YouTube, but most of the people that I watch on YouTube are on Twitch anyway.
so you just watch it there.
So I watch people like CoStar and HC Justin.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. All right. I like that. I've been really big into YouTube for home content.
Mm.
I feel like maybe I'd like to maybe do that as a separate time. I'm going to cover a couple of podcasts. So one podcast that I've recently gotten to in my commute it's a show called 20,000 Hertz at 20k.org, which is it's a pretty cool show because it's about sound and noise. Like this one was about
that sounds awesome.
This one was about noise pollution.
From DeFacto Sound, you're listening to 20,000 Hertz, the stories behind the world's most recognizable and interesting sounds. I'm Dallas Taylor.
And so I've been listening to that one because they play around a lot with sound, so that's a lot of fun. And then I got to say hello to my fellow Tims because I'm a big fan recently of Hello Internet. Been listening for about a month or two now. And Hello Internet with CPG Gray and Brady Heron is just it's a pleasant show, and Hadia and I get to listen to it together.
Oh, nice.
And so it's a lot of fun.
CGP Gray is a very intelligent person with a lot of opinions.
Yeah. And then I have to give a shout out to one of my favorite longtime podcasts, the Mission Log Podcast, which have been watching episodes of Star Trek once a week for years now. They're almost done. We're now in season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation. I've been listening since they've started with the original series.
Mm.
And we're about to get to Deep Space Nine.
Oh, that's a perfect time for me to join.
So for you Deep Space Nine fans,
yes.
That we're still in TNG season 7, but it's coming in weeks. What I would recommend is subscribe to Mission Log and then jump around in the back catalog for some of your favorite classic Star Treks, just to get a sense of what the show's like, and then jump on for DS9. So it's the Mission Log podcast.
I did remember one more broadcast I used to listen to a lot, and I haven't in recent years just because I don't have the time to, but it's the Keith and the Girl podcast. It's just these two people that live in New York, and they just talk about the news. And they're just funny people because they're also, I think Keith is a comedian, and I think his partner is, I don't even remember.
Really? Okay, well, so.
But it's nice because I think you'd like it because they used to live together and be boyfriend and girlfriend.
You're such a romantic.
But then they broke up. And they're really good business partners still. And I don't know, it's just really nice.
Yeah, that does sound good. I was just looking at my podcasts, and I think I am subscribed over to like 47 podcasts. It's kind of nuts. Not all of them are weekly, though. That's for sure.
See, that's funny. I don't even have that list because I just download them all manually still.
Oh, really?
Because I'm just an animal bumpkin.
Oh,
yeah.
You're an animal. No, I think a lot of folks still do that.
That might drive you crazy, though, because Keith and the Girl is daily.
Oh, that'd be a little much. I pretty much have eliminated all daily shows from my diet.
I should give a warning. That is a very crude show.
I feel like we should also give a shout out to some of our shows that are friends of the show.
That's for sure.
Of course, I listen to Ask Noah every single week. I have to.
Late Night Linux.
Of course. Love the Late Night Linux. Mm-hmm. They're out twice a month. That's always good. Ubuntu Podcast is weekly.
I feel as the gamer, I have to shout out the Linux Gamecast.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of course, the TechSnap program. Got to catch the TechSnap program.
Those guys are amateurs.
Wow, dude. Wow.
Ouch.
Oh, and somebody should probably mention Linux Action News, which is crushing it and it is a good news show. One of the things that really turned out well with Linux Action News, just while we're talking about it really quickly.
Yeah, please do.
I'm super proud. Is Joe and I accidentally are turning into a little bit of, I'm not going to say journalists because that's a loaded word, but research hounds. Like we're really, like when a story comes out, we're contacting sources, we're emailing people, we're doing additional reading, reading the mailing list. Like stories are really intensely
researched. I believe the word that you're looking for is investigative reporters.
Maybe.
How about
investigative
just
podcasters? How about that? News sleuths. Yeah, we're really news sleuths about it. Both of us are really interested. You
distill it down so well. Even if you don't have a lot of time or aren't really a podcast person,
right,
you can just catch like 30 minutes of updates in the world of Linux and open source.
Yeah, guys, we forgot to mention the best podcast.
Unfilter?
No. Get out of here.
Come on, the production quality
You're
on
fired.
That.
You're fired. This is my show
production
now.
Production quality
fired.
On that show. Come on, it's just incredible. It's incredible. It's
man.
Incredible. Whoever produces that show live is really talented.
I can hear the narcissism from the next state over. No, Chris, I was talking about user error.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a great show.
The Colts classic.
Oh, that show's okay.
You were almost in this vlog. I had to cut around you.
Yep, I saw.
Yeah, did you? Yeah,
some careful editing.
I did. I cut carefully.
People can see bits of me.
So I mention it here because this is not a big... There's not a lot of Linux news this week. Normally, we'd be sitting here chewing on something really Linuxy, but there's just nothing really that we feel like talking about. So I thought maybe we'd talk about the fact that I posted a vlog about the last Linux Action show. And it also takes you to Linux Fest Northwest 2017 and that whole trip.
Yeah.
You know, looking back on it now, so this is episode 21 of User Error, and we just recorded Lucky 13 of Linux Action News. So it's been 13 weeks since since the Linux Action Show ended. And I feel like I'm still processing. Still, my life is still sort of sinking to a new normal. Post 11 years of doing a show on the weekends, every weekend, you just really build a lot of your life around that.
I mean, I can hear it when you talk. You know, you're still making comparisons to like, oh, now that I'm not doing this or that. Or,
yeah, when we're talking like off camera. Yeah, or off mic. So I posted this vlog and people have responded to it. I've gotten notes from people that said it made them emotional. Just saying goodbye to last and sort of gave them closure, which it did. It was interesting. I started putting it together and I wasn't even convinced I was ever going to publish this story.
Right.
So we go to Linux Fest Northwest, and the couple of days leading up, picking up Wimpy from the airport and Alan Jude, also in the vlog, I'm filming everything because I just don't know what I'm going to do with it. And I filmed a little bit of you and me hanging out at the booth, and I just sat on my hard drive. And, you know, SSD space is kind of at a premium.
Yeah.
And so it just sat there, and it's gigs and gigs because it's tons of drone footage.
Oh,
it's
right.
Multiple cameras. And, you know, it's 3 days worth of shooting. I really should delete this because
that 4K is expensive, Chris.
Yeah. It's taking up a lot of space. And it's like, hey, not yet. I can't delete it yet. And so, you know, 13 weeks go by, and I still haven't deleted the footage. And that's when I said to myself, okay, this is subconscious Chris telling me you're going to use this footage. You don't just waste this much SSD space and delete everything else around it. Yeah, there's something in here.
You just needed to remove yourself far enough from the situation to be able to create.
I really did. That's what it was. That's
the narrative.
That's what it was like. The ending of Last was emotional for me. And it was seeing Wimpy for the first time was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Hanging out with everybody. And we had parties here, which not all of them made in the vlog, but, you know, we had parties here at the studio and lots of technical hurdles that we had to overcome. And I had to distance myself. And what's funny about it is I really, really kicked the shit out of myself about it for a long time. There's huge gaps in the vlog where I didn't publish anything because I knew what I needed to publish was that story, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And so I just couldn't, I was like, I had writer's block. I just couldn't move forward. So, the trip to Montana sort of gave me an excuse to tell another story, to tell another big story. Cause I did like an update and I did the Dell review, but I needed to tell another big story. And so the trip to Montana gave me the opportunity to tell another large story, really put some distance between me and Linux Fest and the last Linux Action Show. And then when I sat down at the footage and I started going through it, I could see like the elephant in the room, that there was tension about the last, because, you know, normally in some ways where I know how Noah and I interact, I can tell there was some tension there because we hadn't really finalized the last, and we had so much going on, and there was a lot in the room. And it was going back, the story started clicking for me. So I put it all together, and it ended up being the longest vlog I've ever made, 22 minutes long, which I try to keep it around 10 minutes so I don't want to waste people's time. They got other stuff to watch. But this one, there's no way to tell the story without anything less than 22 minutes. And so I put it all out, and it was fascinating for me to watch because enough time had passed where I'd forgotten some of the inner bits. And so it was sort of like watching it from the audience's perspective, which is kind of interesting.
That is.
And it just turned out to be, I don't know, it turned out to be exactly what I needed to do to finally just close that chapter on the Linux Action Show. And I think based on the fact that it has 127 upvotes right now on the YouTube, I think it's also something that the audience, that's got to be one of my highest, almost, it is almost one of my, it's my second highest ranked video right now.
See, as a sort of a behind the scenes thing, I think a lot of people that say that you should do the vlog like daily don't understand that to make a good vlog daily, you have to be doing that full time because because the difference between just throwing a bunch of clips on the internet and having a good vlog is that you have to constantly be thinking about and crafting the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like the story is there, but you're not necessarily going to get a story just from a bunch of clips.
Right.
So you have to spend hours going through all that to craft that narrative.
So I did I tracked my time a little bit. It took an hour to review all of the clips into a simple labeling method. So I went through and reviewed all of, except not including the drone footage. I forgot to track that. But just the primary clips, the story clips, it took an hour to tag that and the B-roll. Then I started editing after Coda Radio.
Chris, you didn't leave here till like 9:30 at night.
That's when I was done. But at that point, it was uploading to YouTube. I hadn't uploaded. It was uploading and was scheduled to publish when I left at 9 p.m.
Yeah, you left at 9 p.m. However, you also arrived at like 10 a.m.
Yeah, and...
And all you did that day, I think, was work on that vlog.
Well, and I did Coder.
Oh, right.
So I did Coder, too.
But that's only like, what, 2 hours?
it was a couple hours and a little bit of pre-show.
It was
like... Just all if I do it all in one go, that's how long it takes to put together the vlog. It's a pretty intense process because, you know, it's there's a lot of time finding music and then there's tons of time editing. And then you have to do passes. So if it's a 20-minute vlog, that means I'm watching it for 20 minutes every time I do a pass to do editing. And every time I do a pass, I usually tweak it.
So my estimate, assuming you did it all that day,
I did,
was probably about 9 hours.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And that's super intensive work. That's my watch is off. My phone is off. Everything's set to D&D. I forget to drink.
You're
I forget
in the
to
trenches.
Eat. I didn't eat. I actually just didn't eat. I didn't, and I forgot to drink. The only reason I stop is if my phone rings or I have to really, 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 really go to the bathroom. And
that's 9 hours of work for one 22-minute video.
Yeah. That will never the business argument for that is just really bad. Mm-hmm. It's really, really bad.
But if you enjoy it,
yeah, it's a good
and
creative
it means
outlet.
Something to you.
And it was good to tell. I felt like telling that story gave me a good closure.
Yeah,
on that.
Totally.
So, and how do you put the price on that?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of people in the community that got closure on Last too. So that feels like, as somebody who's had shows that I'm a huge fan of, they've gone away. If I could help anybody get a little closure on something, that seems like how do you know?
That's worth
you,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Part of me almost wishes I could technically do it, but part of me wishes I published it on the sometimes on the main Jupiter Broadcasting channel because it would reach. More people,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, but
this one you could, I suppose.
Yeah, it would seem weird to start publishing the vlog randomly on the main channels.
I suppose that's
so
true. Yeah,
it'd be nice if YouTube allowed like some kind of cross posting.
Yeah, I've also thought about just going on there and recording a video and saying, "Hey, there's a video for a lot of you Linux Action Show watchers," but that also seems really self pluggy. So I normally don't even talk about the vlog except for there's really nothing going on Linux this week.
Right.
At least as of we record. We're going to finish, and then some huge news.
Boom, bombshell.
And then I would have never have put this in the show. Yep. Now it's time to turn the tables and ask the audience a question, a little hashtag Ask Air response. So send your response with hashtag Ask Air Telegram, or if you want to send it via email, put it in the subject line, or preferably Twitter. There's a bit of a behind-the-scenes debate, Wes. Now, you get to see us. You get to see us air a little dirty laundry.
Ooh. Wes, this guy is trying to ruin my fucking show.
So that's what that smell has been. Okay.
I'll give you this. Nobody worked as hard on the show as Rikai does and did last week. Last week, though, especially, because it was one of those where I didn't even create the doc.
Right?
I had to get out of here, and I couldn't even create the doc. And so he, from editing to full publication.
It's his show.
It's all of it. So, you know,
this guy just shows up and says some shit on a microphone.
He has earned the right to air a grievance, I feel. And so we're going to do it. We're going to do it here, and we're going to ask for the audience's take and see what they think we should do. Audience guidance is requested. Here's the thing. I recognize the heritage of this show. Born of the ashes of the Linux Action Show, featured on the Jupiter Broadcasting Network, I have suggested that perhaps we should have a minimum bar of Linux. Now, I will admit this week, there's not a lot going on that we want to include in the show, so this is not a great example this week, but I feel like we should have a minimum bar of Linux. Like a certain percentage of the show should be about Linux.
At some point it is. So, Linux is a core part of it, is what you're saying.
And we're all Linux users, even Rikai in some capacity.
Here's my counter. Yes, its heritage is LAS. However, if you think about it, LAN, it covers the news segment of LAS.
Thank you.
Ask Noah, it covers the debate segment of LAS.
Yeah, and definitely the new user stuff too.
To me, user error is something that covers the human segment of LAS.
You forgot about Linux Unplugged.
Linux Unplugged was already its own show though.
Yeah, and,
that's true.
Yeah,
Linux Unplugged covers basically the rest of Linux.
I'm not saying I want to force Linux in here, but I kind of am saying that. I'm kind of saying that.
To me, user error is not a show about Linux. It's a show about our human side. And if Linux happens to come up in our lives, then it makes sense. But I don't think we need to seek out Linux-specific topics.
But you take an episode like this week, there's almost no Linux to be had, like, because, you know, we're just,
you
at a certain point, we're just all going about or doing our daily stuff. There's nothing new to talk about.
You say that, but we were looking for Linux-y stories to try to fit in.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, so do we need, if that's not, if Linux isn't something that should be forced or whatever, should there be other pillars that are considered when you're like trying to generate content or trying to things to focus on for the show?
Well, I mean, you know, the human side of stuff, talking about, you know, that, I think that sort of breeds its own content.
I also feel like that's the most vocal feedback we've gotten, is that people love this show because, not because it covers Linux, but because it covers us as people, and they feel closer to us.
And we're people that happen to use Linux.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, should there be a minimum forced bar of Linux content into the show?
Or at least an active consideration
no,
of
no,
that,
no.
right?
Chris, the question is, Do you side with Rikai or do you side with Chris?
Yeah, that really is. Hair or beard? Which one is it? Let us know. Hashtag Ask Air.
Go to the internet and vote now.
Hair or beard. Telegram's fine in the Jupiter Broadcasting group. Twitter's preferred. And if you want to send it in via email, just put that hashtag Ask Air in the subject line.
And if you want me to see it, because screw all those other platforms, put it on Discord. Woo!
For 20 years, Manfred has earned money, has made a living, has survived entirely by hacking online games, and he's coming out now. I don't really know why. He had a talk at DEF CON, and he did an interview with Motherboard, and he talks about going back and hacking games for years, you know, duping money, duping items, selling them wholesale on Chinese marketplaces and eBay back in the day, and just making a living for years, starting with Ultima Online Forward. How come I didn't think of this?
Maybe he's coming out because hacking games have become less profitable, and he's trying to open up a secondary revenue stream by giving advice to other hackers.
Ooh, there we go.
You know what's funny is if you read through this article, he doesn't really consider himself a hacker. Like, they position it very heavily as him being a hacker, but he considers himself more like just poking at protocols and seeing what kind of results he gets back, and he considers himself, his business, to be wholesale.
He's an unwilling penetration tester.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he wholesale sells items on Chinese marketplaces.
Yeah, to me, that's kind of the part that makes him the hacker, is that he uses it to have a profit.
The idea that, like, if I could play Star Trek Online and make my living from it, if I could play Star Wars, the Old Republic, and Star Trek Online and make a living, I think I'm all about that.
Well, then why aren't you a Twitch person, Chris?
Yeah.
Because there's no money in it.
I don't feel like that's true.
Well,
I had a really good weekend, Chris.
No money for me. No money for me, that's for sure.
People are sick of the hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris is a boring gamer.
Yeah, I am not a good gamer. That is the problem. I can play MMOs, but that's really more about playing systems at the end of the day. I think this is a good read if you guys want to put something in your read later queue.
I would think you would be super against this guy because he is ruining the sanctity of these games and causing unintended issues.
Yeah, I suppose he is, isn't he? He's violating their
pristine sanctity. Well, I feel like he's more like economic manipulation than anything else, because it doesn't seem like he has any sort of interest in anything outside of that.
And at his scale, he probably is slightly manipulating the markets in these games.
Yeah.
There's also the other story here. The undercurrency story here is that these virtual currencies can actually be converted into real
money.
They're
fungible to some degree, yeah.
Buying gold is so popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Chinese have that market cornered.
He started one day with putting an Ultima Online castle on eBay to see if anyone would buy it, and he ended up earning $2,000.
That guy has been around the track. Wow. Ultima Online is like 1998.
That's what he started with, yeah. And so he's like, wow, when I made $2,000 from selling an Ultima Online
castle,
amazing. I was all in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be too. I would be banging on everything. And so he says there's more games that he doesn't mention, but Lineage 2, Shadowbane, Final Fantasy, Dark Age of Camelot, Lord of Rings Online, Rift.
Mm.
Oh man, I remember Rift. Age of Conan, sorry. And Star Wars, The New Republic, Guild Wars 2 and others, he all has hacked.
I'm going to admit something that might piss some people off.
Oh yeah?
I've never hacked a game. However, I have quit a game and knew I wouldn't come back to that game and sold my account.
Oh, really? I've thought about that too.
To me, that's not a bad thing. I feel like I'm getting some of my investment in that game back.
Yeah.
But I feel like some people would think that's really bad.
I, as somebody who would be buying the account, would really appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it.
I'll tell you what. Like, for me, a lot of times, the only thing appealing to an MMO to me is the end game. And I just simply don't have the time to grind out a character for 6 months to get there. And so I just don't even start.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could come along and for, you know, a reasonable sum, and it'd have to be reasonable, pick up an account that has a bunch of goodies and play a game that I've been wanting to play for a while for a couple of weeks, I would be down.
Yeah, the problem is a lot of people that play games would be really pissed at it because it explicitly breaks the TOS of these companies.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
But to me, who's leaving the game permanently, I don't really give a crap anymore.
Yeah,
really, the person who needs to worry is the person buying the account.
Yeah, they're assuming the risk. But if they want to take that risk, my account's for sale.
Sounds like one of his tricks. I don't know if it's an active trick, but one of the tricks he's at least used in the past is figuring out a way to log into a game twice by like confusing the game somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So however he can trick the logon server, either they haven't properly prevented this or there's a way around it. He'll log in with the same account multiple times or shared accounts and figure out ways to duplicate items between accounts.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
And then sell those.
Race conditions and all of their little transfers.
There's a really big problem in one MMO that I can't remember the name of right now, but they would intentionally log in, go through the effort of creating these items that were really rare and hard to make, and then intentionally crashing the entire server for everyone. And doing that caused the item to be duplicated when it came back up.
Jerks.
So I think they had the item in their inventory and they put it in some kind of storage. But when they crashed the server and it came back up, it rolled back the inventory. So you had the one in the storage as well as the one in the inventory.
Do you remember my buddy John?
Mm-hmm.
He and I were playing WoW when it first came out, and we drove all over Washington trying to find two boxed copies, because that's how you got games back then, was on CD.
I think I remember you talking about this sometime.
Yeah, probably did. And we even called into work sick to play WoW
all day long. Didn't you guys go to like some town a couple hours away and stood in line?
Yeah, it was crazy. We just really wanted to get in on it for some reason.
In like the middle of the night?
And you know, towards the end of my play stretch, something that was happening a lot for Windows users was they were running like these hacked together VB programs that would automate input into WoW. And so you just have your character stand at a pond and fish for 24 hours and sit there and collect stuff from that.
Now they have this thing, and it's actually allowed by Blizzard, where you can play multiple characters at once. As long as you're physically doing the inputs yourself, you are allowed to...
Wow.
It's called some multitasking.
It's called multi-boxing, actually.
So you run
multiple clients at once. So all the characters are doing the exact same thing. But as long as you're doing the input, it's within their rules.
So like if you tie a keyboard together? Or...
Well, no, you have one keyboard, but then you have like multiple WoW windows, and you have like...
The keyboard inputs go into both.
Yeah.
Wow.
Using stuff like auto hotkey.
Yeah, so back then you'd just see characters running in a line and like just doing stupid stuff. They were on automatic mode. They were doing like automatic quests, and people would just leave and go to work and leave their characters playing.
That is against our rules, because you're not doing the inputs.
No. But so we took the time off of work because we were really into the game and hurt our backs in the process like old men, and would see this just run rampant during the day. Just rampant. These automatic players.
The like proportion of legitimate players plummets, and you're just left with this desolate wasteland of idiot.
This Manafred guy is not alone. Although 20 years and the amount of money he's made, I bet you he's at the top of the
game. Sounds like he's pretty expert, yeah.
And he was going to do a live hack on stage at DEF CON. But the DEF CON folks are like, well, if you give a talk, we're gonna record that. And he's like, I
can't show you how I do it.
I can't publicly disclose how I'm hacking this company.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, that's too much risk for sure.
Yeah, so unfortunately to the DEF CON crowd's disappointment.
I'm surprised they haven't, like, you'd think that would have come up before and you would have, like, certain closed room
Maybe
talks or something.
Normally what people do is they talk about things that they used to do in the past that have been fixed and they can no longer do.
You know what's funny, though, about when you go to these conferences is you learn about stuff that should be in the mainstream, but nobody in the mainstream knows. And there's stuff at every conference I go to where you go to, like, these, they call them birds of a feather sessions, where, like, they're like these break-off sessions. And you go into these rooms, and there are people there that are doing shit with, like, credit cards or mesh networking or super cheap laptops or just all this really off the wall stuff. And you look at that and you go, that literally would change the world if that was mainstream.
See, it's not like DEF CON is, but that's one of the reasons that I'm going to TwitchCon in October.
Oh,
is to learn
are you
about,
really going to go?
I'm going to go.
That's awesome.
Jesus. Do you understand that? Where is this at?
You'll have to travel.
Long Beach, California.
Are you going to take the train or are you going to fly?
Fly.
Beard goes to CA.
I would take the train, but the train takes like, 12 times as long.
So you're gonna travel off season, off your normal travel season. This is that's big.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Did someone replace him with the imposter?
I mean, you start podcasting, you're streaming, and now
you're
gonna
show your face. Maybe
I don't understand what's going on here.
I've become a terrorist, Chris.
Are you going with somebody? You need to go with somebody.
Well,
you should have a partner.
The thing is, I offered to Chase He decided not to go.
Oh my God. Chase, what are you doing?
He decided it's not worth the money investment for him.
Yeah, I suppose.
And then I was going to go with Noah just because Noah wanted to have some fun.
Yeah, it seems to be fun.
Turns out he's busy that weekend.
He's already busy in October. That's when you know you're busy.
Yeah.
I know there's probably people listening who are like, dude, I'm scheduled out a year from now.
I feel honored. He put me into his schedule of topics to bring up with his assistant to figure out if there would be time.
Wait a minute. Noah has an assistant?
Well, assistant, I don't know, whatever. Whoever schedules for AltaSpeed.
I really think he should get an assistant. That's a great idea. Anyway, I'm impressed. I think you should do it. I think it'd be, traveling by yourself, though, is rough. I hate doing it.
I kind of like it, actually.
Do you really?
Yeah. Hey, Chris, you know I travel by myself literally every year?
I know you do.
But that's like a homecoming type
thing. What do you like
thing.
About it?
I don't know. It just feels like an adventure, kind of.
Honestly,
see, the companion.
And you can do whatever you want.
If I'm driving, 100% agree. But flying is such a... is such a handing over of my sovereignty, my personal rights. Like, they just treat you like meat when you go through that security. So, like, having another person there, having another,
you
like...
You want a meat shield. I get it.
Well, it's like I have companionship while
having someone else to make miserable.
Well, I mean, while I'm being stripped of my humanity, it's nice to have a human connection, is essentially what it is.
Just send somebody a text message.
Okay.
Yeah. Why inconvenience them?
Yeah, okay.
I just have a drink before I get on,
there
bring a
go.
Good book, and
that,
then...
You know, it's funny you say that. So there is shit in my head that I don't do because it's not how you do things. Like, I just the other night, I had to realize, like, I'm an adult. I can do that if I want to. Like, if I want to do that, I can do it. Like, if I wanted to have a shot before I go on an airplane, I could do that.
Chris, you certainly can.
But when I'm thinking about it, I would never do that. I would never do that. But then I'm like, well, why the fuck not?
Yeah, right?
Like, drive down there when I park, before I walk in, take a shot or something, and, like, don't do it and drive. But, like, you know,
yeah,
once
right.
you're safe... Take a couple of shots, and then just enjoy the walk.
Oh, yeah. I know people that, they go to the Delta Sky Lounge, and they get fucking smashed. And
yeah,
get
that is true, yeah.
Which is perfectly fine, as long as you don't get on the airplane and start berating people.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You gotta be civil.
If anything, it might help you sleep.
I feel like life should be easy and simple enough where you can say, I'm gonna be driving for 2 weeks. See you soon. And, like, the world just goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you could have the flexibility of just going somewhere for
so,
2 weeks.
Do it.
Well, it's not me. You're the one that's flying. I mean, geez, Rick.
Yeah, but you're talking about yourself at this point.
I do that.
Yeah, that is what I do.
That is what I do.
See, the thing is, I have found that life for me has gotten so much better now that I stopped giving a fuck what other people think.
That's true. That does help a lot.
Because it turns out a lot of people don't actually give a fuck about what you're doing.
No.
So you're happier and they don't care. So it's good for everyone.
Everybody wins.
Do what you want.
So in October, we're going to have, when you get back, we're going to have a full report, right? About how Twitch
played.
Yeah, maybe.
A beard special.
I'm not sure if there'll be a whole lot to talk about that'll be interesting. I think, like, for me, the reason I'm going to TwitchCon is to learn some of these streamer tips and a lot of connecting with people more so than, like, going to panels and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
To me, it's a investment in connecting with the community.
Yeah. I still would like to hear how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
To get back to the games, though, Chris, I am super addicted to a game that's just been updated called Path of Exile.
Path of Exile.
I've never heard of this. Tell me a little bit about it. Because you know me, I'm a big gamer.
Have you ever played Diablo?
Love Diablo.
Of course.
This is like Diablo on...
Shut your face, really?
A whole other level.
No.
Now, imagine you have Diablo.
Well, this looks like Diablo, kind of.
Except any class can use any skills.
Oh, it's only for... Why do you do this to me?
It runs perfectly in mine.
Does it?
Yes.
Oh.
And I've had several people come to my stream while I'm playing it asking if it worked on Linux, and it works well on Wine. In fact, I think they have a post on their forums telling the best way to do it.
I'll throw a link to this in the show notes if people want to check it out.
You can get it on Steam or off Steam as well, by the way.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to run under Wine, I'd probably get it off Steam.
On Steam, it has a gold rating.
Hey-o!
But, so, imagine you have all the classes, but any class can use any skill. In addition to that, all skills are items, and all your gear has slots for those items that can be connected. So you can chain different effects on skills.
That's cool.
Then on top of that, you have a skill web that modify these skills with basically infinite variation, because a skill web has like 350 different nodes that all interconnect. So the way you build builds is you select skills on that skill web with your levels, and then you choose different ways to link the item skills together for crazy effects.
And is the UI to manage, is the UI to manage that, like, you know, actually usable?
Yeah.
This looks pretty good. I'm looking at the YouTube video right now. Path of Exile, huh?
They just released a new expansion that doubled the amount of content in the game.
Damn it.
The best thing about that game, it's free to play.
What? Oh, so it's online. It is online. I was going to ask you about that.
It is online.
What are the online aspects of it?
Well, there's an extensive trading economy.
Okay. Nice.
So that I could game this for 20 years.
The difference with this game, though, is that the currency is not gold. It's actual items that you use in the game to modify.
No.
So your gear has like different attributes.
That's a great idea.
And the items that are the currency are things that can also modify those attributes in different ways. And the value assigned to them is based on how valuable those things are.
Huh. So that, like, that that system of tweaking your weapons isn't just arbitrary. It actually makes the items more valuable.
Yeah, and then there's like unique items that give special effects. So the character I'm building right now, there's this skill called Molten Orb or something like that, where it throws out this orb of lava, essentially, that bounces a couple times and kills stuff.
As lava do.
So I have a unique staff that turns all of those, or turns any skill that I attach to it, into a Nova. So instead of throwing one ball in front of me, I throw like 8 balls in every direction. And then I attach another skill to it.
You love your balls.
I attach another skill to it, which is also a ball, where it also throws lightning orbs in every direction.
Oh.
So as long as I'm pressing a button, it will continue throwing lightning orbs and the fire orbs. But as soon as I stop pressing that button, it explodes everywhere.
Really got so everything on the screen just dies. Explosions.
I love exploding balls.
Woo!
That sounds great.
And this is a build I came up with that nobody else has done. So this is a completely original build.
That's cool.
So yeah, you can get really cool. Very original with your builds.
So there's a lot to explore and customize.
It's
and
basically infinitely customizable. So like, this is a game that I play for like 3 months at a stretch and then put it down for 6 months. And they come out with a new league, which they have new leagues where every league you have a gimmick. For this league, you have these harbingers that spawn where you can't directly attack them, but they spawn enemies and you kill those enemies and that lowers their hit points and then you get rare drops. But every few months they come out with a new league. So I just play this game for like 3 months and then I go away for 9 months. I come back to a new league and it's like a new game.
I'm going to check it out. I'm going to try it under wine. I'm going to try it.
I haven't tried something under wine in ages.
And I've been wanting a new version of Diablo. Mm-hmm.
And just to assuage people's fears about it being a free-to-play game,
Julian Assange,
they do have a microtransaction shop, but literally everything except for buying more inventory spots is all cosmetic stuff.
I dig.